For May 4th, 2017, it's the Lullabot Podcast. Hey everybody, it's the Lullabot Podcast, episode 210. I'm Matt Cleave, a senior developer at Lullabot. With me as always, co-host of the show, front-end dev, Mike Herschel. Hey Mike.
Hey, how are you doing?
Super. Hey, I'm really amped up for this topic today.
Ooh, that's the best pun I've heard.
I'm sure it's been totally an old one for our guests today, though, right?
That's actually true.
Yeah.
We're talking about the Accelerated Mobile Pages project, system. What do you want to call it?
Project, I would say, is the right term, yeah.
Okay, AMP, Google AMP. And you're already hearing our first guest of the show.
Yeah, hi.
Yep, up first, we have Paul Backhouse. He is developer advocate at Google, heading up the outreach for AMP. He was one of the original creators of jQuery UI, and for those of you who don't know, jQuery UI is in Drupal core, so he actually wrote a good amount of code in Drupal, cool. Which is kind of cool. So you're coming from us from San Francisco, is that right?
That's correct.
Yeah, at the Google office in San Francisco. Also with us today, senior developer at Lullabot, regular on the podcast, it seems, these days. He's one of the creators of Drupal's AMP module. He attended AMP conference in New York City a couple of months ago. Now he's from Minneapolis, Minnesota. Hey, Matthew Tift.
Hey, guys.
Hey, thanks for joining us.
You bet.
So if we could just jump in. Oh, Mike, before we get too far, you've actually done some work with a client also implementing AMP, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I actually did some work for one of our clients, Rodale, who does like men's health magazine, women's health,
some publishing stuff, right? Yeah.
Yeah, and a bunch of other stuff implementing AMP. So I have a decent amount of experience implementing that.
So can you tell us what it is? I actually haven't had a chance to work with it yet. So just kind of a basic overview. What are we doing?
It's kind of like a sports drink, right?
What?
That's a good way to describe it.
All right, I'll let you take this, Paul. What exactly is AMP?
Yeah, that's actually a fair question because you can't just pinpoint it to one single thing. It's a combination of three things. It consists of AMP.js, the AMP library that powers a website, basically like any library of JavaScript framework would do. And then you have the AMP HTML spec that is derived from HTML or is actually built on HTML, both a mm-hmm. superset and a subset of HTML that enforces certain standards. And then there's the AMP caches, which further accelerate the delivery of all AMP pages. So altogether, it's an ecosystem of things that make your pages extremely fast.
Okay, so what exactly is AMP solving? What was the impetus to create this project?
So it was basically a bunch of people that came together, including publishers and developers and admins, who all agreed that the mobile web today sucks. We all weren't super happy about the state of the mobile web because we kind of wanted it to not suck. And our aspiration was, going back one step, right? When the iPhone was introduced first time, when we saw the first era of modern smartphones, Apple wanted the web to drive all of the app ecosystems around smartphones. Mm-hmm. And obviously, as you all know, that didn't really work out the way it should have. and a part of that reason is this really unhealthy relationship between advertisers and analytics companies, etc. And obviously we're one of them. And so we've been playing along it was partly our fault as well. The unhealthy relationship between everyone who has the keys to your site made web pages and websites just insanely slow and user unfriendly, I would say. Mm-hmm. And to break that circle of doom, AMP was created, and AMP is really an attempt at enforcing certain rules, guidelines, how to best architect your pages, and also removing some of the toys you had access to before.
Yeah.
So, for instance, you can't write user authored JavaScript on an AMP page, and therefore just really forcing you to stay on the fast lane, really giving you very little reasons to break out of a good user experience. And unfortunately, if you know, all of you have been doing web development, so you know that it's tremendously hard to stay on the fast lane if you just go nuts with building a website.
Yes.
And yeah. So that's what AMP is really trying to address.
So a user, just a regular internet user, would whip out his or her smartphone and would Google something, and there would be AMP results, right, in the results, and that's where a user might interact with AMP.
Yeah, or if they go directly to a website of their choice and enter the domain, that can happen too, because with AMP there's really two ways of doing it. One, you could treat it as sort of like an extra feed so you have a canonical website, as we call it, and then you have a paired AMP site. That is one way you could do it. That's how a lot of people today do it. But then there's also sites like our own website, ampproject.org, that really just use AMP as a library on the page. And so if you go to ampproject.org today, you just look at an AMP page, even though you don't come from it via Google or something.
That's pretty interesting. So who actually creates the AMP specs? Like I see tags in there like AMP image and AMP. How do those components get created? Are those Google? Are those vetted by Google?
They are vetted by the AMP team.
And okay.
So yes, since the core contributors to AMP, unfortunately right now, are still a bunch of Googlers.
Yeah.
That means that, yes, your assumption is correct. They are vetted by Google indirectly. But however, many of those components are contributed by third parties.
Mm-hmm.
It goes through a specification process. So there's an intent to implement on GitHub and on the mailing lists. And then there's a design review that we recently opened up that everyone can attend. It's usually on Wednesdays. So basically a hangout.
Okay.
We discuss whether that feature is actually worth doing or not, whether it solves a thing that hasn't been solved before, that is not easily solved by CSS or normal HTML. And then we end up building it if no one has any objections. So it's fairly similar to how a feature arrives in the browser, just that the whole process, pun intended, is a little bit accelerated.
So you mentioned that all the core contributors right now are Googlers, but so you guys are actually looking for like some non-Googlers to get in there at some point?
Yeah, I thought I heard you say that it was unfortunate that...
It is unfortunate. So this is not by design.
Yeah.
We don't want it to keep it that way. Mm-hmm. And the unfortunate truth is that we just didn't have anyone knock on the door. So far, no one is really interested in assuming a core contributor position with the project outside of Google. So please join.
Yeah. So what's involved with creating an AMP component? Let's say I have this idea for, I don't know, some type of crazy slideshow, which is not a component for already, or mm-hmm. something else similar that I can't do in, you know, CSS, and obviously I can't create my own JavaScript and have that work. What do I need to do?
But first, you go through the first phase that I briefly discussed, which is you go through the intent to implement, and you convince the overall AMP team and people that look at the issues on GitHub that is actually a good idea. And the way you convince them is by showing that it's a pretty important primitive that a lot of publishers on the web use to build things. For instance, an accordion would be something that is clearly not just relevant to one party, but it actually is deployed as a user interface solution. So that's the first thing you do. And then you move over to an actual implementation. So you create an implementation, you create tests, you create a validator spec so that the AMP validators, there's a bunch of AMP validators that ensure that the page is valid, can mm-hmm. actually run over the page and include that component. Then you make sure to work with with people like me, so to ensure that the docs are all appearing on the homepage, and then we do some outreach for the new component. There's also a sort of beta phase. We call it a dev channel that we use so that we roll out a component. Everyone can test it by opting into the dev channel of AMP. And if nothing bad happens, then after a few weeks, we roll it out into production and ship it to everyone. And what's cool about here, by the way, the way we roll it out to production is not like a normal JavaScript library. We don't really have versions. So we don't say, hey, we're rolling it out in version 1.6, and then every publisher in the world needs to upgrade to 1.6. That's not how it works. AMP is actually an evergreen library. So every publisher in the world will get the improvements at the same time.
Wow, that's a huge, I can see that being a huge burden, though, because like at the same time, you have the potential to break a lot of things.
That's true, yes.
Yeah, but it sounds pretty interesting, and obviously there's tons of benefits there.
Yeah, benefits, but yes, you're right. There's the potential to break things, which we've done before. Not going to go into detail, but you know, things happen. And also, it's actually, you know, it's really almost like building standards, you know, that are long-lived, because you have to think about the long-term impact and how do you upgrade if you messed up one of the properties. None of these are easy questions.
Yeah, yeah. So let's talk about caching AMP pages. So the cache is, so Google will automatically cache your AMP page, or my understanding is that there's some other caches. Is that correct?
Yeah. So the caching, first of all, the idea of AMP is that you as a publisher, by opting into AMP, you're saying, hey, I want my pages to arrive on a user's device extremely quickly and efficiently.
Okay.
I don't really care how it does that. I don't really care if they arrive by the means of another cache, by the means of something else. What I care about is that my brand stays consistent, that no one really, you know, inserts ads or something into my page and messes with it. But how you deliver it is your choice. So it's basically like, you know, if you're building a Twitter app, right, then Twitter tells you that you shouldn't create their API every single minute or every single second, but instead you should have a local cache in place to cache away a lot of what you need. And so the idea of the AMP caches are fairly similar. It's a local cache for the actual platform that shows AMP pages to users. In the case of Google, that will be the Google AMP cache. And so the Google AMP cache luckily can be used by everyone. It's a cache that automatically caches every available AMP page that is served from the Google index. And it has been the first cache, but now there's more caches appearing. So it's not just a Google thing, but in fact, the caches have fairly strict guidelines that we publish. And so the second cache that was announced was done by Cloudflare. So Cloudflare has released their own cache as part of AmpConf in March.
Now, is it possible for someone to set up their own caching system, you know, if they're a large corporation?
And,
yeah,
absolutely, they could. Now, they would have to follow all the same guidelines.
Yeah.
And in order for us to, you know, kind of give them the official stamp and feature them on our pages. But they could absolutely create their own AMP cache and then use it on their own platform.
That's pretty interesting. Is there like any type like free open source software to do that? Or is it just configuration through your standard Varnish or something else cache systems?
So far, the only thing that we've published are the guidelines that, you know, are kind of high level. We don't have, so the Google AMP cache is not open source as of today.
Yeah.
And I don't know of any other cache implementation that is open source. That would obviously be really interesting, but so far we're not there.
Okay. So the cache does a lot more things besides just cache, right? It pre-renders the HTML and it does some validation. Is that my understanding of it?
Yeah. So it does all those things. It validates. So the one of the fundamentals of the cache is that it validates that a page is in fact valid AMP. So it's not like if you go to the origin directly, then depending on the user agent, as a publisher, I could redirect to a non-AMP page that could be super slow, right? And hijack the user agent and show modals of all sorts and stuff. And so that's something the cache ensures cannot happen. So with the cache used, that can never happen because it will only ever serve valid AMP pages. And so that's one aspect of the cache. But then the other aspect is all sorts of optimizations that can be done on top. So for instance, one of the optimizations that the that the Google AMP cache has started doing recently is image optimizations. So we automatically convert. If we just find an image on a page, A, we convert it to WebP if it makes sense to certain browsers. So we automatically convert it to all sorts of image formats. But then we also shrink it with lossless and lossy optimizations. And furthermore, we create responsive images out of it, so resolution dependent. So all of that is done on the fly on the cache. And then the next thing that we're actually really excited about, which we've talked about at AmpConf a little, is that we're currently creating a way of server-side rendering AMP for AMP cached pages. That means in the future, right now there's a bunch of boilerplate CSS that in an AMP page that ensures that there's no flash of unstyled content on an AMP page because AMP uses web components and all of those need to be initialized by a JavaScript library. But in the future, AMP cache renders some server side on the first hit and then the AMP JS library takes over and just initializes the interactivity, we don't need that anymore. We can actually render much faster even. And that I'm really excited about that.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Isn't that kind of what the caching is already doing, or is that something different?
No, the caching is not doing that yet. So right now, you still need to initialize everything in JavaScript.
Okay. Yeah.
So just to kind of play devil's advocate here, Mike, you're already an amazing front end developer who makes your front end code run like a clock. It's quick, it's speedy, and you can even do the hey, Paul Irish said it was okay humble brag about a Twitter conversation you had. And, Matthew Tift, who's also on the podcast here today, and I can get together and make sure that the site comes off of our server in a super speedy way. So I already have a fast site. How come? I mean, why are we? Why are we, I mean, I don't know. It seems like why is AMP required at that point? Like, what are we trying to do?
I guess that's a good question. So, like, if I already have a fast site that loads, in less than a second, with a CDN on top of it, do I need AMP? And the kind of an extra question is that, like, right now, like, Google's like it's incentivizing folks to by putting AMP pages in the top carousel. So, like, if I already have a fast site, why can't this be in the why can't my site be in the top carousel?
Yeah, very good question. So the reason why we can't do that today, and this is actually something contested a lot of times because people simply don't believe me, is that we have real trouble measuring the performance of websites.
Okay.
Like we at Google Search, at least, by we, I mean Google. I don't work on Google Search directly, but Google Search has the problem that we cannot reliably measure sites' performance. And so now people would say, but hey, you have PageSpeed Insights and you had this mobile speed thing in the past. Yes, that's all true. But these were fairly simple tests that just scratched the surface of performance validation. Now, on a normal website, right? First of all, what I want to say is, obviously, if everyone was as great as you, then we wouldn't need AMP in the first place, right?
Can I write that down?
Yes, of course. and so at that point, we wouldn't need AMP in the first place if everyone was responsible building decent pages. However, that's not the case today. And again, we cannot validate whether a page is fast or not. Of course, there's services like web page test that can at least somehow look at load time. Mm-hmm. But if you think about when is a page actually interactive, that's a much harder question to solve. And that varies greatly on the actual type of page. If it's a game, that's a very different thing than if it's an actual article where you can measure whether something is scrollable and the main content has been rendered, the main text content. So that's something some teams are trying to solve at Google, for instance, with Lighthouse. I don't know if you've heard about it before.
Yeah, I have heard of that. That's a browser extension that helps measure the performance of like single page applications. Am I correct, or is that something else?
Yes, that's correct. And there's also a CLI version of it. So there's a lot of work going into that to make sure we can test something like time to interactive. Mm-hmm. But we're not done yet The signals are not reliable enough to trust it. And then if you go away from load time performance and actually look at runtime performance, gets even more difficult. Because now imagine an arbitrary page that uses a lot of JavaScript, right? The first load could actually be fairly quick. But then as soon as new modals come in and new areas of the page are accessed, things might get slow. And so what you would need to do is you need to run the page for a couple of minutes, kind of click on all things programmatically and ensure that everything works. And so there's a remote possibility that we'll get there. But, and this is critical, it's just cost prohibitive. So in order to do that, right, we would need to do that for every single page on the internet. We would need to have a virtual machine for every single page on the internet, run it for a couple of minutes. And I think that's not something we can do easily in the next few years at least. So yeah, this is kind of sad, but I wish I had better news on that front, but I think it's the truth. I think that's the thing that stops us from letting every fast website to get the same benefits.
So Mike, I guess the other breath of the same thought as you build, you know, great websites is you've also shown me your results after the ad network code is added and after, you know, tracking stuff is implemented. And then, you know, there's like 7 iframes or something for nested for one ad or something like that, right?
I've created websites before where, you know, if I go into Chrome Developer Tools and filter them by like the origin domain, you know, there might be like 50 odd, you know, HTTP requests. But if I load everything after all the trackers come in, there's somewhere like around 150 HTTP requests. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you talk about runtime performance. I've created some before that have like, you know, some pretty crazy like scroll-based animations where I'm following, you know, best practices and avoiding paint storms and, you know, reflows and everything like that. But at the same time, you know, debugging the runtime performance and troubleshooting it, you know, I can find, like I track down this piece of JavaScript and it's some analytics code that's somehow generating heat maps wherever my mouse goes, you know, and of course, like that causes all these types of performance problems, you know, and I can definitely see what a problem it is because you would also have to constantly like remeasure that on a regular basis for all of these pages, you know, like for example, like if I load up this page that I'm thinking of right now, you know, it might have one set of ad trackers and networks that gets like kind of called from one to the other. If I load it up next week, it's probably going to be a different set of JavaScript files. And, you know, each one can either solve or introduce different issues. So it's a tough problem to have.
And all this stuff was added because that's what you wanted to do, right?
Yes.
No, of course not, right? So we know we've got the list of requirements and the list of things that have to be integrated when we build a website. So does AMP limit that? Like what can't you do when you're building AMP?
It does limit that. So there are certain things that advertisers and analytics groups are just not able to do. And of course, there's always discussion about the sort of stuff. Like creating a heat map, having direct access to the host of the page and, you know, doing whatever you want in JavaScript. That's not going to be an option for any analytics provider in AMP because of the exact same reason, right? Because it just hogs the page and hogs the CPU. And so we won't give that capability to an advertiser, to an analytics library, or to anyone really. But what we are doing is we're giving them a standardized interface to access things they need. So for instance, with analytics, there's AMP Analytics, which is a shared component that is built by the AMP project that is sort of a mediator. And so analytics backends can hook into it and can still get a lot of valuable data out of it. But we do it in a performance sensitive way. So this is usually our attempt of solving those things. But yes, there are limitations to what you can do in AMP. And these limitations are to some extent by design, to some other extent are in place because we just haven't found the right solution yet to surface them in a performance-sensitive way that we can still measure. but we'll expand them over time. But what's really important to understand here is that at this point, as soon as you opt into AMP and you as a business make the decision, hey, AMP is good for me, then AMP becomes a political tool within the company. At that point, if the manager asks the developer, hey, can you just put this analytics library? I need this heat map on my page because I don't trust the other data, right? The developer right now doesn't really have a choice and will always say yes because, you know, that's kind of his job. But then in this new scenario, you can say no because, hey, no, AMP doesn't allow me to do it, right? So you blame someone else and therefore shifting the political reason for why you can't do something.
I blame Google so much. This is just one more thing.
Yeah, but that's cool with me, right? If that's the reason why you're blaming Google, then I'm happy.
Yeah, and you know, when I was doing like a little bit of research for this podcast, you know, watching the video, someone said that AMP kind of solves a political problem, and that political problem is the fact that everybody wants to jam their JavaScript and custom code and document rights and all that type of stuff into your HTML, you know, and us as developers, we know that's a bad idea, but if you're getting a paycheck, you have to do it.
And this is kind of crazy because I put most of the blame to the overall ecosystem and how messed up the ecosystem is and the relationship between all the different vendors. However, I do think we as developers need to take a little bit more responsibility because this is our craft, right? We need to be proud of our craft. And like if you're a blacksmith, you're not going to let the client say, hey, I want to do all of those things that make the sword really, really crappy. But then you're just not going to do it, right? Then you're saying, hey, I can't make a sword with those limitations in place or another tool, right? And then if you're a developer, Like imagine giving a key to your apartment to 100 random strangers.
Right? Yeah.
That's what you're doing on a website by giving access to all of those analytics and beacons and whatever. And so for some reason, we're comfortable doing it on a website, but we're not comfortable doing it with our apartment. And I don't know why.
Well, and the same thing can happen. I mean, you've seen in the news where, you know, different malware will infect various different ad networks and you'll have reputable sites, you know, that we visit injecting malware into your browser if your browser's not updated. And that's pretty scary.
Yeah. I mean, the question is there a social responsibility for not writing slow pages? And I would say, I mean, in my opinion, yes.
Yeah, that could be a topic for another podcast. We need to write this one down, but it gets hard, you know, because you know, from my point of view, I'm developing this website for a major network. I'm not the person who's injecting, you know, this JavaScript in there. It's that, you know, they have like a, you know, some internal developers that do that type of stuff. I'm not quite sure what gets done, but. Mm-hmm. At the same time, you know, when someone's solving your, you know, paying your paycheck, as a developer, it is your responsibility to say, hey, this will cause this problem. This is going to slow down your pages. It's going to make your pages very slow to render, you know, maybe on this device and this device. Like, I believe it is definitely your responsibility doing that. But there are times where, you know, business and development don't always line up. You know, there's times where I want to refactor code, but, you know, the client might only have, you know, X amount of hours available too, and you just have to kind of do it. And it's always, it's never fun kind of going that, but yeah, that's a whole topic of conversation. So maybe we should talk about something else.
If AMP is designed to be fast and to create a wonderful user experience, but you know, your website, you always want to be fast and create a wonderful user experience, but done wrong, it can be slow. Can AMP be built to be slow? Like, can I make an AMP page not fast?
Oh, that's a fascinating question.
Yeah, if I'm doing it intentionally, if I want to make the slowest AMP page ever, how can I go about doing that?
Is it possible? Yeah.
It is possible. Now it is possible, but it's very hard to do. So the same way it's very easy to do it on the normal web. But in AMP, it's actually very hard. What you could do, for instance, you could create a bunch of really intensive CSS animations, each using transforms and some crazy gradients, and then just hog the CPU that way. Or you could load a bunch of really, really big web fonts. That's another way to really slow down your page. Those are things you could do. Now, of course, you can also just create an extremely huge DOM. That's still an option, and just lots and lots of HTML and intricate and HTML. So there are ways to do it, but it becomes very difficult to do.
What can't you do?
You cannot. So, for instance, with animations, since I just talked about it, you cannot use properties in animations outside of transform and opacity, because those are the ones that are GPU accelerated. So that's one limitation when it comes to CSS. There are not very many other limitations when it comes to CSS. So other than that, responsive design, everything is game. Now, with HTML, you cannot use the built-in external components like image and video, but we have equivalents in the AMP world that do the same thing. And then the biggest limitation really is that you cannot write any JavaScript on the main page. So any user-authored JavaScript is forbidden. And that is the biggest limitation that a lot of people will have to think about if they can live with that.
Can you do hamburger menus with AMP? I've seen websites doing that. I don't know if that's a custom component or something.
Yeah, absolutely. There's a sidebar component that works specifically for that. However, you can also just do it with CSS. In fact, it's fairly easy to do it with CSS.
With the checkbox thing?
Yeah, so the checkbox hack is one way to do it if you need something fairly custom. On the AMP website, we use AMP sidebar. But for instance, on my own homepage, I use the checkbox hack to do the menu. Is it a beautiful solution? Probably not, but it works.
Can you do auto start audio on a web page with AMP?
please say no.
I don't think you can. You can do auto start video, but it will be muted.
Sure. But I guess getting back to what you were saying before about AMP solving a problem. So if it works now technically as a solution, and then it helps solve this sort of political solution of saying, I don't want to do things, you have this... This project is moving quickly. I've been working on this for about a year and a half now, and then there's just one thing after another, after another, after another. Mm-hmm. Do you think then the long-term goal is different from that? Is it more than just solving a political problem? Do you sort of have a vision for where AMP is going in the future?
So I can't speak for everyone in the AMP team, but I think the long-term goal for any kind of library or framework that works around certain incompatibilities or platform issues. For instance, jQuery was one of those libraries, right? And still is. The goal for jQuery and jQuery I was always to become irrelevant in the future, to let us go to a point where we have all of those primitives and components available natively in the browser. Every cross-platform limitation is gone, and all the bugs across all browsers have been fixed and normalized. That was always the goal, to actually replace ourselves in the long term with healthy web standards. And at least in my opinion, the goal should be the same with AMP. I think AMP is an extremely efficient stopgap solution for the current state of the web, to restore it back to something that's actually usable. But there are many parts in AMP that in a standards-driven way I would do differently. And so I think the long-term path to a healthy web is to take many parts of AMP, see where they innovated, and then create standards that drive the needs and fulfills those use cases. For instance, we will never get to, or at least, well, never is a bit of a harsh word, but I don't think we'll easily get to the kind of reliable performance measuring on the current web. But if we create a more constrained ecosystem, for instance, even if we just forced images to always have a height and width, that would already be huge. But that kind of change is really slow when you want to create it in a standards-driven way. But I think we need to get there.
Yeah, from my point of view, you know, like browsers handle layout and stuff really well, even if you're doing like complicated, I don't know, Flexbox or whatever layouts. And yeah, images, you know, the images cause you know your DOM to shift and stuff like that. But the whole injecting JavaScript into the advertising ecosystem is the main culprit here. And once again, I'm kind of getting up on a soapbox here. But that is why people install ad blockers. You know, I mentioned malware being installed through ad networks before. And the fact that you can use ad blockers to make you more safe, I think, is kind of ridiculous. It should not be that way. You know, and the fact that, you know, it's very hard to track the ownership of ads in certain cases is very tough. And I think you might have a better idea to talk about this maybe after the break, but I feel like AMP is almost a way to save kind of the advertising ecosystem, which honestly Google depends on. You know, if everybody installs ad blockers, it's going to be very hard to monetize the web, which is going to make the web a worse place.
Well, that's also how we have jobs, Mike.
Yeah, exactly. You know, that's, as I mentioned earlier, I'm getting paid by large organizations who pay Lullabot for me to do very interesting things and, you know.
And put ads on their website.
Yeah. Part of that is putting ads on their website and getting people to click on them so they in turn can make money.
Yep.
That's a good point.
We'll delve into that and also talk about the Drupal integration with Drupal's AMP module coming up right after this. Hey, it's lead developer and trainer Joe Schindler from Drupal ISB. What's going on, Joe?
Oh, not much. I'm just hanging out.
Yeah?
Sitting at my desk, wondering.
I doubt you're doing that because there's a bunch of new content on the Drupal ISB website, isn't there?
Yeah, there is, actually. We've been working really hard on continuing to add content to our Drupal 8 module development guide. We've been adding just a lot of, you know, information about how to make use of hooks and events and plugins and that kind of stuff. At least I've been working on that. Blake has been working on content related to Drupal's entity API and field types. So we got a bunch of content about that. Amber has been adding more new content to our existing theming guide. I expect within the next couple of days, we'll have a bunch of new tutorials on the site for how to handle breakpoints and responsive images in Drupal 8 themes, which is pretty cool.
Wow. So, you know, well, that's been exciting for me to watch is the amount of Drupal 8 content that just keeps being added to the website.
The big ones we have right now are the theming guide and the Drupal 8 module developer guide. The idea is that these guides are sort of a reference and they contain all of the baseline information that you would need in order to, for example, build a module. Once we've got those completed, we'll start to do things that are a little bit more project specific, say, you know, build a module that contains a block that does X, but we'll be able to point to our reference guides and say, if you don't know how to build a block, here's the reference on how to do that.
You know, hey, I need a module on Drupal 8. It's very similar to, well, how long is a piece of string? There's so many different things you could be doing within Drupal's APIs.
Yeah, that's accurate. How long is a piece of string?
Yeah.
Yep.
It's a metaphor. I didn't say it was a good one.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Well, thanks, man. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too.
Welcome back to episode 210 of the Lullabot podcast. We're talking accelerated mobile pages with Googler Paul Backhouse. So prior to the break, we were talking a little bit about ad networks kind of going off on a little rant
prior
about
to
how
our commercial, yep.
Yeah. So something else that I've heard, and I don't know how much you can talk about this, Paul, is that Chrome is potentially going to integrate in a limited ad blocker into the browser itself.
Yeah, I can't really talk about it because I'm not working on that project, and we don't really respond to speculation.
Yeah.
Of course, it comes like the whole discussion has been going on for a while, and this all comes at an interesting time. And within AMP, we're doing our own project to kind of counter bad ads, which is AMP for ads. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've heard about it.
No, tell us about it.
But yeah, AMP for ads is basically exactly what the name says. So it's using AMP for creating better ads. So we're working together with a bunch of beta ad partners to see if they can use AMP to create better ads. And so the idea here is that you use the same pre-rendering model that AMP does, the same performance benefits that AMP has for those ad creatives. And this solves the problem of an AMP page loading extremely quickly, but then ads loading multiple seconds late on iframes. Because before that, right, ads would actually block the rendering of a page. So mm-hmm. in this case, you just get a slow experience, but the user will probably still wait for the ad to load because they don't really have another choice to get to the next block of content. But on an AMP page, the content is always prioritized. So the content will always arrive faster than any ad on the page. So this becomes a real problem to ad companies, of course, because now they it's like a spotlight shining down on their performance issues. And so to solve that, we're trying to get them to use the same performance techniques that make AMP what it is. And this is what we call AMP for Ads.
Be fantastic. Is that going to be available for non-AMP web pages?
Yes, you can absolutely run AMP ads on non-AMP web pages as far as I know. I haven't seen any, but there's no reason why you shouldn't, because again, like at that point, AMP would run within the iframe and should work fine. But yeah, the what our engineering lead said once, which I thought was really interesting, was that the idea here is to make an AMP page load faster with ads than one that has an ad blocker. And so you'd think immediately, hey, how could that even be? But in fact, if you know how ad blockers work, they are actually adding to the performance issues as well, because they use complicated rules to scrape the CSS and apply selectors to the page to scrape the ads out of the page. And that is actually often a fairly slow process. So the idea is that the ads would be faster than the actual removal process.
That would be fantastic, and that is a great goal.
And yeah, I mean, you talked about, you know, users being frustrated about ads, right?
Yeah.
And therefore using blockers. And I share that opinion. I think the reason very often is not the ads themselves. The reason is really that the web often becomes unusable with bad ads. And I can absolutely sympathy with people who say, hey, I want to use the web. This is the only choice I have. And I think that's a super healthy, unhealthy state of the industry that we need to get out of.
I think this is one of those aspects of AMP that makes some sense, because in a way there's other solutions like the Chrome having an ad blocker built in, which feels sort of heavy-handed. And then there's other solutions to the problem of slow content, like Apple News or instant articles. And those two feel sort of heavy-handed because they're proprietary. Whereas AMP, as we've heard so far, is an open source project. They're looking for more people to help. They're trying to get other people to do caches. And they're prioritizing content, which I think is what a lot of us want. So, well, none of the solutions to this problem of a slow mobile web are perfect. I feel like those are some of the good parts of AMP that I just wanted to sort of point out.
Yeah, thank you. And we never make the statement or the assumption that we created a perfect solution. But however, I'm going to statement that I think we created one solution. Is it the best solution? Probably not. But it is the only solution that we could think of that actually works today and not in the long-term future.
Matthew, you had the opportunity to work on a project with Lullabot, working with Google to implement this for Drupal. So to our listeners who might have a Drupal website that could benefit by running or using AMP, they can just plug that in and it rocks, right? How does that work?
Well, that is sort of the goal. The Drupal AMP module is at drupal.org/project/AMP. And it is meant to be as turnkey of a solution as possible, where you have a site that has nodes, and the AMP module right now only works with nodes, but essentially it tries to create AMP versions of your pages in as easy a possible way. So there's the AMP module. There's also the AMP theme, which allows you to theme those pages. And then there's an AMP PHP library, which is supposed to be sort of platform agnostic, or at least work for other PHP projects. And we have these three different pieces that work together to help allow people that are working in Drupal to create AMP content on their pages without a lot of extra work, although Mike might disagree with me there, since you certainly have to theme the AMP page to look how you want it to look.
What was really interesting is when I implemented this, most of the work was actually just kind of standard Drupal theming. You know, there were a couple issues because Drupal has the built-in RDFA module that introduces all these weird attributes into, you know, your HTML tags, which caused the validation to break. So that was a little bit of work, and I actually contributed back a little bit, I think, to the theme, not the module, which is kind of interesting. So what versions of Drupal do you have modules for? Is this 7 or 8 or both?
It's both. Yeah, it's Drupal 7 and Drupal 8. Mm-hmm. And the idea then is that you turn in these modules. There's a configuration screen for deciding which kind of content you want to create AMP versions of. And then you can essentially create a view mode for your nodes. That's an AMP view.
Okay.
And then, so the way that it works technically is, like, if you have a regular Drupal site, it's serving out this content. And then in the metadata, it points to the AMP version. So you will have a different URL that is the same URL that ends in ? AMP for Drupal. That's how we do it now. And that will just get served up separately depending on how you have your site configured.
So Matthew, I'm curious about this. This is, as we discussed earlier, a very common approach to how publishers run their AMP pages. So they have one normal web page and then one AMP page linked to it. But I'm wondering, have you thought about bringing Canonical support to the plugin, which would mean that you just use AMP as a library, and you just have one single page that already uses AMP?
So earlier when I said that the AMP project moves quickly, I would say that this is a perfect example of that, because a year ago I would have said, no way, you can't do that. But then I was at AmpConf a couple months ago, and I saw that people were doing this. And yes, I immediately thought about that, because I mean, that was just not something I comprehended a year ago. I don't know if this is something you had in mind at that time, Paul, but now, yeah, there certainly could be a way that you would use this AMP module and that all of your code would be AMPs. You'd always have fast loading websites. And how that works is just, you know, I've still been trying to figure that out, but you're basically having the regular site point to itself, and that one is the AMP page.
I would think that, like, since you're doing the AMP as a view mode, you could use views to output like that AMP view mode and create your list of content like that. And that should work properly. Is that right, Matthew? Or am I just completely not thinking correctly?
I'm not sure. And right now the module does not support views.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's one of the many, many things that we would like to add to it. I mean, there's just the AMP project keeps changing, keeps adding new features, and a lot of it's really exciting stuff. And it's been honestly kind of hard to keep up with all of the changes and figuring out how they will integrate with the module as it is now.
Welcome to front-end development, Matthew. Paul, I cut you off earlier. What were you going to add?
Oh, no worries. No, I'm just, I just wanted to say, yeah, so this whole canonical, as we call it, canonical AMP approach, that you just have one site and it happens to use AMP is very dear to my heart. So for instance, my own blog is running off a customized version of the WordPress plugin. And yes, sorry, it's not on Drupal. It's running on a customized version of a WordPress plugin that actually gives me that capability. So, and not all of it is valid AMP. So the homepage right now is still invalid AMP, but all the posts themselves are actually valid AMP on both desktop and mobile, and really just one page. And this, of course, really reduces, a lot of the complexity of working with it too.
Yeah. So I have a question about the PHP component that you talked about, Matthew. Is that available? So my understanding is this PHP component will take kind of your standard jumble body field of crap, including YouTube videos, iframes, and whatever else editors have embedded in there, and then it will just kind of amplify it, right? It'll make it into valid AMP, hopefully. Is that available on Composer? Is that in any other projects?
Yes, that's available on Composer, and yes, it's available in other projects. I can't remember the name of the other projects that are using that library, but it does, just like you explained, it does its best to take a field and then convert things like images and iframes and Instagram embeds and things like that, and convert them to AMP HTML equivalents. So it will also help you determine if your site is functioning properly and it is validating as AMP, because that's one of the key things with AMP development, is you have to make sure your pages are valid AMP, because if they do not validate correctly, they will not get cached by Google. Mm-hmm. So the library that Sid worked on, Sid Harth, he...
Siddharth Kshatriya, correct? Yeah, yes. We have a coworker who wrote that module, or not module, but PHP component, who is awesome.
Yeah, and that one's on GitHub.
Okay.
We also have the AMP theme that Mark Drummond worked on. And then, like I said, there's also the AMP module, which will lead you to the other various projects that work together. But certainly, yes, this some of the things that I saw people doing with AMP at that AMP conference really had my brain going. So I guess this might lead into another topic, but especially with not just AMP, but these PWAs.
Mm-hmm.
So
what is a PWA?
It's short for a progressive web app.
Okay.
And it's sort of an umbrella term for how to write the best web apps in 2017. So the best kind of modern web app. So what it includes is the main component that drives it is a service worker. So if you haven't heard about service workers, it's sort of a client-side proxy that is like a web worker. It sits in the browser for your own domain, and it can intercept and handle any sort of incoming and outgoing requests and cache away any kind of resources. So for instance, it allows you to create a web app that is completely offline capable, that caches just the app shell and then brings in content over time. And so there's a lot, this is a new paradigm how to build web apps. It also includes the functionality to bring push notifications to the web. So it's really about building fast and engaging experiences that in many ways compete with native applications while still giving you the ephemerality of the web. You know, the fact that you can come to a progressive web app via the browser, via link, and then it installs itself through the service worker in the background and can then offer you an add to home screen prompt even to be able to be installed to the home screen and then be available offline. So that's the idea of a progressive web app. And so in combination with AMP, it becomes really interesting, because a progressive web app usually lives with lots of client-side JavaScript and depends on lots of client-side JavaScript. However, what you can do is you can combine those two. We added components that allow you, what we call AMP install service worker that allows you to install a service worker for your progressive web app from an AMP page. What this means is that if you build a site that has lots of content and has lots of what we call leaf nodes, so those are the entry points into your site, you know, an article on your web page, for instance, a blog post that you've wrote that people link to. If you make those AMP, and let's say people look at them from Google Search, the actual app that you want them to install can install on the fly in the background while they read that article. And then as soon as they click on another link, they get instantly upgraded to that experience. So that's one way of combining the two that I really like, that I help advocate for a lot of times.
I saw a similar thing. I don't know if they collaborated with Google, but Washington Post did something similar with that, where it was just a very app native-like experience, but it was all done through progressive web apps, and you could just had really nice swipe. It was very, very smooth. And I look at that type of thing, and I think that is the future of the web. So that was one of my questions, is can AMP support that? So thank you.
Yeah. Absolutely. Again, it's the combination that matters, because if you combine the two smartly, you really get an experience that is always fast and then upgrades itself over time, which I think is just, that to me is the progressive that we need.
Yeah.
And so that's what I'm really excited about. And I'm glad that you had those experiences at AmpConf, by the way. That was really the goal.
Yeah, it is just, it was something, because we've been talking about that for many years. I think I've been working on web projects since about 1999, and this idea of publish once, oh, I can't remember, whatever. Like, we want to write the code once and then have it just work everywhere.
Yeah. But
this seemed to be like it was actually doing it, and it was actually doing it now. And it was integrating with an experience on a smartphone in a way that I hadn't seen before, and it was fast. So generally we think about these things as all sort of separate, but the idea of having like a fully AMP website that also could turn itself into this app on your phone that could work when you're not connected to the web and still, like for a publisher or something like that, have all this content in it is just, I mean, it's a little mind-blowing to me, especially since a year ago we were saying, you don't want to use AMP for your whole site, because how would you even do a homepage? So, mm-hmm. You know, that's really changed, and it's good to see. It's exciting stuff.
And then, you know, one level further is actually, and you just talked about this briefly, but, you know, if you're a big publisher today, you're probably maintaining a native app for Android, one for iOS, internet articles, Apple News, AMP, a desktop website, a responsive website, MDOT website, right? So you have all those deploy targets that you're currently maintaining, and all of those have different backends mostly, and different data connections. And that's another idea that we want to bring to the whole AMP to PWA story, because if you think about AMP as a data source, as a data format, and you basically just replace JSON or something else with AMP, so all you do is you deploy AMP pages, and then both the progressive web app and the native apps and the iOS app and Android apps could actually just build a very slim, easy to build navigation shell around it. And AMP would be the driving content data source. So that really allows you to streamline the whole platform that you're building.
So it'd be kind of like Cordova, which currently kind of wraps up, you know, HTML and creates an app out of it.
Sort of, yeah. You can still build a native app if you want to. If you want to have that channel, that's fine, mm-hmm. right? And if you need additional access on top, for instance, sensor access that's not available yet on the web, then you could build that as part of the shell and then just delegate to the content, and the content is rendered via AMP.
Does AMP have the capability to interact with like geolocation and maybe, I don't know, orientation sensors yet? Or is that something that's a separate component?
Not yet. We mm-hmm. could, in theory, add components that do that. We actually have a component launching fairly soon, which is currently in beta, called AMP Bind. And it's sort of a new event programming model for AMP that allows you to say, you know, if something happens here, do that, and then fetch that data and show it here. So it's sort of a programming model, limited programming model for AMP that replaces JavaScript on an AMP page. And I think as part of this, we're going to see much more capabilities retrofitted, added to AMP pages that weren't there before, that allow you to do more interactive, dynamic things.
Interesting.
It also seems to address one of the issues that a lot of developers have expressed, which is they've complained that this is yet another thing that they have to implement when they're building a site.
Right.
And it's a valid point. Now, if you looked at what's happening with these progressive web apps that are using AMP or full sites that are using AMP, you could then say the reverse, that you as a developer now, especially if you're like a solo developer and you want to be able to, maybe you're not an iOS or an Android developer and you want to be able to offer your clients a free software based solution that gives them a cache for free and that works like that could potentially work as an AMP, an application on their phone as well as a website. It seems like that could be attractive to a lot of folks. And, you know, other folks, I'm sure, are going to be suspicious of that. But the fact now that you could also build that without actually even being sort of dependent on Google's cache, you could use a different CDN or you could use Cloudflare now that has an AMP cache, that there are lots of different places that people are going with this, but they're all building off this idea of a web that is a content-first experience. And it sounds like the roots of AMP as only being for mobile are perhaps being rethought now.
Yeah, this is another good point, actually. So we're trying to move away from the word mobile and accelerated mobile pages because really much it has all the responsive capabilities built in. You can actually build tablet experiences, desktop experiences with it. We have quite a few interesting helpers in AMP that make, for instance, building responsive video much simpler than it was before. And most people don't really associate AMP with that because they think it's just purely for mobile.
That's interesting. So you talked about AMP as a data source, like replacing JSON and stuff like that. That to me seems kind of, I don't know, kind of crazy. maybe I'm not understanding it right. So like your AMP comes down and it is structured content, but it's not all going to be structured in the same way. And the schema might be different. You're going to have different pieces of content embedded in different places. I guess you could maybe do that for web pages as long as you're not reformatting them.
Of course, it comes with limitations. So yes, if you need completely strictly, purely content, then you might still need to go the JSON route. But if you know that the paragraphs and images will be, you know, responsive, but generally in the same flow in every app, and not really need to reshuffle it all the time, then that's the route you can take. So yes, of course, there are limitations to this approach.
Yeah.
But for instance, what you can do is one of the questions I get all the time is, well, on every AMP page, I still have a page header and a page footer and its own navigation. So do I now have a double navigation? So I have a progressive web app around it that has its own navigation as well as the one in the AMP shadow DOM thing? And the answer is no. You can actually selectively remove components once you load in those AMP sites or even add things back in. So let's say you have an ad library that you want to use that is not available in AMP yet that you want to insert while you're in the progressive web app. You can actually do that with shadow slots that insert directly into AMP pages.
That is interesting. I did not know that was possible.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. All right. That's great. So, Ray, let's kind of change subjects a little bit to like the top stories carousel. So the way I'm seeing it, and please correct me if I'm wrong, is like getting your content into that Google search result top stories carousel, that is the big carrot, you know, because if you can do that, that's obviously very, very prominent location on the, you know, the most popular website on the internet. How does that work? That's kind of a loaded question because I think everybody's trying to reverse engineer that to figure out how exactly it works so they can monetize it. But like, how does it work from a user perspective? And like, what do you need to have in your webpage in order to get in there? Like, if I say, you know, if I make my personal website, Herschel.com, an AMP page, if people Google my name, will I show up there? And I'm guessing not. Does it have to be a new source, or do you have any insight on that?
Well, first disclaimer, I don't work on that product. I actually don't work on any of the Google products around AMP. I'm actually exclusively working on AMP, the open source project. However, of course, since I connected to those people quite a few times a year, I know a little bit more probably than most developers. One thing that's important is, so A, you need schema.org data. So this is an additional a set of data that you need as part of your website to say, hey, I'm an article, here's my thumbnail image, here's my title, a little bit more schematic data to make up your page so that it can be part of that experience.
Okay.
And so that's one thing that you need to ensure. However, that still doesn't mean that you will appear in the carousel. The reason why it's deliberately called Top Stories Carousel is, and no surprises here, it's about top stories. So I don't think my blog posts most of the time are top stories because they usually don't concern the mainstream media. And so those blog posts will probably never end up in the Top Stories Carousel. So the Top Stories Carousel is really just one specific experience focused on a quite narrow vertical of content. And I think that's a large source of confusion around it. Lots of people assume that, hey, if I just do the schema data and have a valid AMP page, I should appear in that carousel. But that's not necessarily the case. It really is a quite selective thing that is about top stories, about relevant news. And you know, we might see more carousels in the future. There's a recipe carousel that triggers if you search for recipes.
Oh, very, very cool. So, and that's AMP enabled with a little lightning bolt and stuff.
Yeah, that's also AMP. And there might be more coming, you know. These kind of experiences are not always taking the entire internet and putting it into an experience. It creates little experience that makes sense for the search query. And so the recipe carousel is one of those, right? You wouldn't expect lyrics to appear in a recipe carousel. I realized this was probably a little bit too generic for the question, but I unfortunately don't really have any insight into the specifics of how the algorithm works. And if I had, I couldn't share it.
I completely understand that.
What about just from a basic SEO perspective? Is implementing AMP helpful from that front?
I would say so. Now, of course, what you don't get is a ranking improvement just because you use AMP. So AMP is not a ranking signal on its own. However, I would argue that indirectly it makes a lot of sense because AMP forces you to write well-structured HTML in some ways. You're thinking a lot more about how do I structure my content on this AMP page versus, let's say, you go with a JavaScript library that builds all of their templates in JavaScript and then initializes the page in JavaScript. Now, SEO will have crawlers will have a much harder time parsing that page versus the AMP page. So, indirectly, I would say there's an advantage of building well-formed HTML.
Sure, that makes sense because I'm not an SEO expert by any means, but from what I understand, if the robot can read it, then you're going to do better than if just the person can read it. So
that would be my hope. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely. And like having the proper semantics and source order and all that type of stuff is also important. And I can see AMP kind of helping to enforce that.
Yep.
Paul, is there anything else you wanted to add about AMP before we get going today?
Yeah. Where can we learn more?
Well, yeah, good question, actually. So, yes, Please learn more about AMP on ampproject.org. So that's I work a lot on that resource, and we just relaunched it as part of AmpConf. Hopefully made it a lot better in that transition. So please check it out. And then we also, and this is important as well, go to the support and then developer support section on that page, and you'll find a lot of additional channels to get in touch with us. So you can get in touch with us via email, through the mailing list, or you could chat with us on Twitter, on Slack, on Stack Overflow. So there's really a number of channels for us to get in a touch with you, and vice versa. And then finally, we just launched our new YouTube channel that is called the AMP channel. And if you haven't seen enough of my face, you will see my face again on the Amplify show. It also has, and this is kind of cool in the context of the show, because we talk quite a bit about AmpConf and your experiences at AmpConf, which I'm glad to hear were mostly positive. You get all of the videos there as well. So on the AMP channel, you can find all of the recorded videos for the AmpConf if you're interested.
Yeah, and a side note for that, I'm pretty confident in one of the videos that I was watching, I could see the back of your head, Matthew.
Yeah, that's how you know it's real.
Nice.
Yeah. Well, thanks for coming on, Paul. Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, thank you for having me. I'm super glad we could make this happen.
Yeah, definitely.
Me too.
Super cool. I didn't know that was all possible.
Well, everything is possible on the web.